This is a podcast from the people behind the world's longest running football fans podcast, The Celtic Underground. You can subscribe and listen anywhere that you get your podcasts. You can have a free subscription where this lands straight in your email inbox, and you can go to thecelticunderground.substack.com. You can also have a paid subscription where you get some additional content, including the In Conversation podcast every week, and the Selecta written, which is basically a rehash of the E-Tim's Rumour Mill, oops, from Glenn Tintin from years ago. Anyway, this is me, Harry Brady, with this week's podcast. This week, I'm joined by someone who's been a guest on our podcast before, but not in this format, but it's someone who's been in the news, the Celtic news anyway, recently, and it's Duncan Smiley. How you doing, Duncan?
Very well, sir. Great to see you. You've got all professional stuff. The last time I was on here, it was Skype. I'm not sure what happened today.
We do have a studio bit, but most of the time it's actually still recorded from my room in my house. But this is the middle.
Thanks for having me again.
That's okay. So the reason you are on is you've been in the news because yourself and David Lowe were involved in an issue with the Celtic Trust. I'll couch it that way and let you explain it. And then moved on to setting up another organisation, all at the same time that the fans have been moving forward on another demonstration thing. So for people who are not following it avidly and are passionately online every 5 minutes about stuff, do you want to talk through what's been happening, certainly from your side of things, in relation to the Trust and what you're doing now?
Yeah, for sure. It feels a bit like therapy, I think. Myself, David Lowe, and most people know David, he was instrumental, an advisor to Fergus McCann, wrote a book on the Fergus McCann takeover, and I've been friends and in business with David for a long time now. And another gentleman, Peter McGowan, who we've also been friends in business with, and Peter, he lives down south, and he was really a big guy that mobilised people in the 90s when they were trying to do the Fergus McCann takeover. So again, just sold his business, a lot of time in his hands, got good skills. And we've been talking that we could see that things were about, looking back, probably the end of the season with the conversation, we could see the direction of travel for the Celtic board. It's over for them, and it is over for them. Like, whether it's next week, next month, next year, 2 years, for that exec team, is over. And so, well, what do you do about it? And I know that David had been chairman of the Celtic Trust. So we spoke about that being a good vehicle because it was already there. It's some members, not a lot of members. Actually, it turned out just under 100 members when we registered to be members. But why would they not go there? Because it already exists. They've got some Celtic shares. We would do that. So we nominated ourselves to be trustees, and we went along to the AGM, which was at Gracie's, the back room at Gracie's. I'll be honest with you, it was a little bit of chaos. I assume nobody asked my name when I went in to make sure there was a member. There was a lot of people there that weren't members, a lot of people there that had a few drinks. And it was a little bit, not chaotic, but it wasn't very well organised. It didn't strike us as being very professional. And given the debate that we had at it, although we were briefly, for about 45 seconds, accepted as trustees, we immediately withdrew our nominations. Didn't fall out, nobody shook hands, and we wished them then and continue to wish them good luck. But it wasn't for us, it was just too much noise there. So what you do nothing. No, we still think that there's something to be done here. So we created an organisation called Celtic Supporters Limited. The boring stuff is a company limited by guarantee, so it doesn't have shareholders. It has members, or it'll have members. Right now it has three members. Me, David and Peter, but we'll hope to have that up and running very, very soon. But there's no shareholders there. It's all members, one member, one vote. And that vehicle has one sole purpose. It's not a protest group at all. And I'm sure we'll speak about the Celtic Collective, because we should. But we're not a protest group. That's not what we are. We have one goal and one goal only, and that is to amass a voting block of shares. Through buying shares to the lost shares that are out there because of the Fergus McCann share issue in 1995. And any money that you generate from membership, you buy those shares on the open market or off market. And that we would hope to get some serious proxy voting rights from small, medium and large shareholders. So it's not going to happen overnight, Brian, but I don't particularly want to sit back and do nothing. I can see things changing in our club, and we think that this vehicle has been missing. There's lots of other protest groups going on out there, but we want to make sure that, or we want to have an effort that we can amass a voting block of proxies and own shares that should something bad look like it's about to happen to the club, maybe even a position to block it. So it's hard. How do you take on a heavyweight like Dermot Desmond? Pretty tough. But what you do nothing. We know what it looks like when you do nothing for your club. Your club's in the deep brown stuff, as has happened previously in our city with other teams. Their view might have been, well, somebody else has thought we'll just go for a game of golf. That's not how Celtic fans are wired up. We tend to mobilise and educate ourselves, and sometimes be quite militant as well when we need to be and have to be. So we want to make sure that we're doing something. That really is a very long answer to a very simple question.
So if somebody's listening to this, they might say, okay, so what's the difference between you and the trust? The trust have taken 26 years to get to, as you've said, under 100 members, and whatever it is, 0.1%, or is it 0.01% of shares?
It's 160,000 shares.
Right.
You better math than me, but it's not a million shares and 1.1%. But,
so somebody might say, well, what's going to make you different and better than the trust then? If the trust couldn't do it after 25 years, are you going to take 25 years?
No, I don't think they will. And it's not a criticism of the trust. It's just there's a lot going on in the trust. When you look at all of the things that the trust do, it's a lot more than just amassing shares. And like you say, they had less than 100 members 2 months ago and 160,000 shares. I don't think they bought any shares because they've not bought any money. They've only got 100 members. They've got limited income. And in our opinion, it was too much noise, too much going on, and if we wanted potential of the club, and we wanted small and medium large shareholders to take us seriously, we might have to have something that was brand new and clean. And as a result of that, we've approached several shareholders, and not right off the bat asked for the proxy, but we'll say to them, if we do this, 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 and this, and they get to there, would you consider putting your shares behind us? And we've had a resounding yes from an awful lot of people. And I think that we're hoping to get our scheme up and running, the member scheme, on our website within the next couple of weeks. We think that we've got commitment, and the proof of the pudding of our meeting, we think we've got commitment that we can very, very quickly get to 500,000 shares and to 1 million shares by the end of the year. And that doesn't mean we'll have bought 1 million shares, because that would cost you a couple of million quid. But in terms of buying shares and proxy voting rights of shares, we would hope to have, I'm going to see 1 million shares committed by the end of the year. And at 1%, 1%, 1%, right? But it's not nothing. And it starts to then put you in a kind of position where you then go to bigger shareholders and say, look, we've got, let's just say we had, if it's 1,000 members that we have, and just imagine it's £10 a month, I don't know if it'll be a £10 a month. Won't be any more than that. If that's 10 grand a month of income, it's 10 grand a month of shares we're buying. It takes you a while to get all the shares at that sort of level. You've got 10,000 members, then you can buy 100,000 shares a month. That's what. But if we can get to 1%, we can be credible and go and ask the people that have got bigger shareholding to put themselves behind us. We're not looking to gift their shares to us. But why wouldn't they give us a proxy? Because there's a lot of small shareholders out there. Another part of it, we're going to offer that share finding service. I'm sure many people will know, and many people will have bought shares. In 1995, Mr. McCann did, which was at that time the biggest shareholder, share offering ever, at the time when it came. And I can remember exactly where it was, and it was, I think from memory, it was £640 that you had to come up with, and I didn't have it. I did not have the money to buy the shares, but a lot of people did. A lot of those shares are missing. There's as much as 20% of shares of the club that are unaccounted for, and they're from that share issue. And There's a bunch of reasons for that. Is that people have died, and nobody knows what the scroll is. People have died and have been passed down to sons and daughters that have assumed, well, they're my shares now because they're my dad's shares. No, if there wasn't a will, there's not. But then the ex-wife burnt it on your way out the door, and you never got a new share certificate. There's a lot of shares out there that nobody knows where they are and they're not activated. So we will be offering a service that we will go, as long as you can give us the name and the date of birth of the person that bought the shares, we can go and find them for you. And those £640, if you bought one unit of shares, you're worth about £2,000 just now. So it's worth somebody finding those shares for you who doesn't want £2,000. And then we would say to you, as Celtic Supporters Limited, here you go, Brian, here's your Auntie Patricia's shares that you bought. Do you want them? Here they are. You can say, well, thanks very much, Celtic Supporters Limited. And we say, look, we'll offer to buy them off you at the market price. You might say yes, so we'll buy them off you. You might say no. And we'll say, well, given the fact that you found them for them, can we put them under our proxy when it comes to voting? So you don't have to buy the shares off you, you can keep them. So I think it's a good service. You're not going to find 20% of those shares, but there's a lot of them out there. And if somebody says to most people, I can help you find those shares that may be worth a few grand, why wouldn't you? Either because you think it's the right thing to do for Celtic, or you think it's the right thing to do for your bank account.
So what would be your purpose in getting to that position? Why would you want to get to that position of having 1% of the shareholding? What's the value to you guys and the value to the support in general from that being achieved? Okay.
So the value, the monetary value to me and any other, zero. We're not taking fees or charging fees for services on this. We're doing this because we've got the time, we've got the passion, we've got the energy, we think we've got the skills to do it. So, but we're not making any financial gain out of this. We don't want to get to 1% because 1% doesn't do anything. But when you get to 1%, you can then legitimately go after larger shareholders, and larger than 1%, I mean, and ask them to put on. Because when you get to 5%, if I rock up at the Celtic AGM and I'm not, which I assume will be in November, and I've got voting rights for 5%, what's I don't go? But I want to see in January if I've got 5%, I can call an AGM. I'm not sure why I would call an EGM, but at 5%, I can call an EGM. Our Celtic Supporters Limited can call an EGM off the club. I'm not sure what you do at that. So you get 5%, you can do things like that. Things like 10% of voting shares, you can call special resolutions. You can vote down special resolutions. More importantly, 25.1%, you can stop a takeover. I don't want to wake up one morning and switch on my phone and see that Dermot has decided to sell to somebody that looks like a bad guy. Because I respect what Dermot says. I don't care if somebody offers me 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 times the value of these shares. I'm not selling them. I'm not having that. Everything's got a price. Now, that might be what we want, is we want to sell to somebody. Careful what you whisper, sort of thing. You could sell to a wrong one. The Celtic Supporters Limited aren't going to own, and their members aren't going to own 25.1% of the club. But I can see a route and a path, and we've had conversations about how we could get to that. But we would need, there's a lot of work, a hell of a lot of work, between now and then. And the first goal is to get to 1%, because then bigger shareholders will start taking us seriously.
So you talked about bigger shareholders. So we've got Dermot, and you might know the numbers better than me. So we get Dermot around 34%. And we've got Linsell Train.
I'm going to guess that'll be 17% then, because that would take you 51. Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Yes, I am amazed at the Celtic fan collective why that element has never been discussed. But yes, I mean, those two bits together take that major shareholding to 51%.
That gives you control of the club, right? And Dermot behaves. He runs it like Tony Soprano runs his organisation. And he's our biggest shareholder, and it really annoys me when he's referred to as our owner or a majority shareholder. He's not. Not in paper, he's not anyway. So I don't think it would take a forensic accountant or a good investigative journalist to do a bit of work, devote a wall in their spare bedroom and start getting drawn pins and bits of string and following the money, making a link between those two lots of shares. And the reason they're not doing that is because they're terrified to do it, because Dermot is as litigious as your man Trump is. He will come for you. He will bring out the big guns. But I think those two blocks of shares are linked. I don't know that. I don't know that, but everything looks like that. They've got previous in terms of business that they've done, and I think he's got option to buy those shares. And of course, if he had got those shares, he's got to make it 51%. Dermot would have to make an offer for every share in the club at 51%. But he doesn't have that. He's created quite a clever situation there. So that I've took that off piece a little bit.
You've then, from memory, because I should, you said about become all professionalised. We're not that professional because this is all now from in here. I think after Linsell Train, you might well have Chris Traynor at somewhere between 5. Chris is somewhere between 5% and 10%, and then.
And I'm specifically, but I'm now, because I'm not going to mention any other shareholder's name.
Right. Okay. So I'm just going to say this for points of reference, so that people have got an idea of where the challenges for you would be. Chris is somewhere around that. And then a chunk of the existing board members are in the sort of sub, from memory, in the sort of sub, in and around 5%-ish.
I don't think there's many at 5%. I mean, you can see it's easy to find. But there are a couple of chunky shareholders after Winslow Train, and then there's a couple that are like low single figure percent.
Yeah.
And then it starts to really get, I mean, I think there's 28,000 shareholders in Celtic, and more than half of them are from that share issue 40 years ago.
So the challenge, the reason I'm mentioning those figures, because obviously the challenge is going to be, and this is where I look at the Celtic Collective, and I've raised a couple of points at the meetings I went to about this side of things. The challenge is you're not just hitting 34%. You're effectively hitting a higher number than that in terms of what can block. But forgive me if I'm wrong, but that could also be a positive, because at 20-odd percent, you need to make a bid for the business. And we've had a special resolution that that allowed Dermot to hit 34% because he underwrote the second rights issue. The rights issue. Because he underwrote that, we passed a special resolution that if he inadvertently then increased his shareholding, he didn't have to make a bid for the whole club. And he has sat not 1% more or less than that amount from the second rights issue ever since. But you cannot do what's called acting in concert. You cannot act openly and on record with another shareholder so that you're both making the same decision, so that you're effectively hitting that 51% because you're arm in arm, but pretending that you're not.
Yeah, so you can't. There's a word for it. It's called illegal.
Yeah.
It's illegal. It's not frowned upon. It's illegal.
Yes.
People go to jail for it. But no, look, so we have not, by any stretch of the imagination, Celtic Supporters Limited never own 25.1% of the club. They never own that. The members might own a couple of million shares. I don't know. But it would be proxy voting rights to stop something like a takeover. And all you need for that is 25.1%. This is not about buying out Dermot. It's about getting enough shares that the club have to listen to you. You can start making demands at that sort of level and proposing that there's a fan on the board, or that there's changes made, that the non-execs become fixed term and they're not there for 20 years, because you're there for 20 years and you're not independent. And I think that's legal. And in breach of the AIM stock exchange rule. But also, it's about getting as much control of shares to vote in one block, because if you've got the £650 or £640 shares on one block of those shares, they don't have a material value. You start putting thousands of them under one voting block, they do have a significant impact. And the club, who, unless they have to legally, they won't see it. They won't see it. Everybody that's watching this knows what our club is like. They just treat the fans with the utmost like contempt and disrespect. It's unbelievable. I said the relationship the board has with its fans, the same relationship that a dog has with a lamppost. And I think, but when you've got enough shareholders voting, as one, legally they have to see you. They have to let you into meetings. They have to give you sit downs. They have to listen. You can't just give an opinions and say no, go away, little boys. Here's a new Henry Larsman collection. Here's your money. That's not what this is. So we're very focused, and it's a sole purpose is to get as many shares under Celtic Reporters Limited umbrella as possible. Zero financial benefit to me other than being one member of the Celtic Supporters Limited. So the shares that are bought through membership are owned by the members. So if we've got 1,000 members, I'm one of 1,000 members that owned a couple of shares, but that'll be through me paying my membership in the same way that you, when you will sign up, and you will sign up, I know where you live. This is not a money move. It's more about doing something. I don't want to do nothing. Sometimes to do nothing is to do something. This doesn't feel like one of those times. And I genuinely believe that there is change coming, both at the board level and at the shareholder level. He's not there forever.
So let's circle back to the beginning. Right at the start of this, you said Celtic board in its current format is finished. It's just a case of when, not if. What is it that's finished about the Celtic board? You know, let's put it the other way. We, for the last 12, 13 years, have had we've had unparalleled success, virtually non-stop winning every trophy that's available. We've managed to achieve that whilst growing the bank account. So whilst there are clubs across Europe that have had some close to similar levels of success, they've spent the money, we've managed to grow the money, and we've managed to have success. So for goodness sake, what is it that you want? Might be what people would say. What more do you want? I mean, we couldn't have more money in the bank. We're in the top 3-4 clubs in the world with money in the bank, without debt and winning stuff. What more? What's wrong with what you?
Brian, I think we've been hacked by Peter Law. He looks at you, but the words that are coming out are very Law-esque. Yeah, I get that, and we can all play devil's advocate as to why it's been a greatly run club and all of those things. I think for a while it was, but it isn't anymore. I don't even think it's run well as a business. It's not prudent to be paying what will now be £20 million in 2 years in corporation tax and have a stadium that needs investment and put the gambling. There's no value in me talking about how we should have bought a couple of players before we played Kaira, because there's nothing I can say that's going to change that or that hasn't been said on your podcast before. But I actually think that this is coming. This has been coming for a few years. I think when we had that horrible season behind closed doors when we were going for 10, me and you nearly fell out that season as well. But we had that horrible season with the 10.
I feel like it was some mutual friend of ours.
Yeah.
I just had to say, we need up again.
We did. Of course, well, here we are. But, yeah, and I've been on again since then. But I think that there was a real... I mean, it was more than pitchforks and flaming torches. It was sharks and everything. It was a full booner. And there was something happened really weird that summer. And it surrounded no getting Eddie Howe and getting lucky. And let's call it, we won a watch and got lucky in getting Ange. We got very lucky. That was more by luck than judgment. And actually, for what it's worth, as an aside, I don't think Eddie Howe would have achieved what Ange did as quickly as he did. So I think we were ready to mount a challenge. We, the fans, were ready to mount a challenge at the club and the board. And along came Ange, and suddenly we're rattling up trebles and everything looks rosy again. But it's still the last 2-3 years, the way that we've managed transfer windows, the way that we've sold players very well but bought them very badly, hearing stories about how we screwed up on deals, it becomes apparent that you've got a board that is promoted way over above their abilities. We have a CEO that was a company lawyer, and I probably didn't have any desire to be CEO. But when Dominic Mackay came in for 15 minutes, he was sort of thrown in as interim, and he just sort of fell into the job and got paid very well for doing so. He's controlled by a chairman, who used to be the financial controller at a club, who's controlled by a minority owner that behaves like a majority shareholder. And it's incompetent. The way that we're doing business and not doing business is incompetent. We've got a board that's been there too long, independent directors that have been there 5, 10, 15, 20 years that can no longer be considered independent. We're not a well-run company. We're just not. And the level of contempt and the customer relationship that we have is just appalling. It's negligent. It is absolute negligent, and it has to have a massive shake-up. And my worry is that unless Dermot goes, for all the reasons we've just spoke about, unless Dermot goes, you just get different people with the same skill set. When you do what you're told, nobody pay you very well. Here's a top line, here's a bottom line, or go away and do it. In fact, it's even worse than that because he doesn't let them make decisions. So I have a feeling that I always think somebody's got to go to jail, right? I think somebody will be thrown under the bus. I imagine probably going to be your CEO. I think they'll think, well, the chairman's got to go or the CEO's got to go. I don't think that that's going to stop the fan group, the Celtic Collective. That they're not going to go all out. That the Rebels have won, we've lost the chairman, because nothing's going to change. So I think it's over for the board. I don't think there's no way back for this. We win a treble this year in the Europa League. That board still needs to go, because that's luck. It's not because of them, it's in spite of them, if that happens. And I don't think that it maybe wouldn't have happened as quickly, but I think if we'd have beat Kairat, I still think the same thing would have happened. I do, and maybe wouldn't have been as quick and as big so soon. This was coming. We were doing what we were doing, irrespective of whether we'd be the Champions League or not. That's a toss of a coin, and it wouldn't have been, oh no, actually, we've got a good, well-run club and a good board because we beat a team with the same coefficient rating as St Johnstone to get to the Champions League. It's over. It's broken. It needs rubbed out and drawn back in again. But, let's say, Dermot's the issue. As long as he's there, he'll just put it in. And that's why you get a good guy like Don McKay that comes in. He's there like, I don't know, it's a month or something, or 2 months. I don't know how long it was. It wasn't long. It was weeks. I can never write the Brian Clough book, however many days it leads. But, and as an aside, I, at that time that was happening, I sat as a non-exec director on a board with Don while that was happening. But I'll save that for another day. But yeah, it's by any measurement, the board is dysfunctional, it's broken, and it needs change. But it won't change it. They'll make a couple of token gesture changes, and who knows? I had a feeling, and I know nothing to back this up, nothing to it back up. I had a feeling that Peter was going to stand down this season. I thought he would either stand down at the AGM or announce that the AGM is leaving at the end of the season. There's no way he's doing that now because it looks like he's doing it because of the protest. But it's not good for him. It's not good for him. But for him personally, his well-being, his family, he made enough money himself. Like, come on, exit stage right. Take one for the team and the club. Supporters, be the bigger man and go and take the CEO with you on the way out the door.
So we've got the Celtic Collective has started at the same time, and is sort of very public. I mean, I know there's lots of things, so you know, for anybody listening to this, I am not saying if they achieve this then it all goes away. I'm just saying one of the loudestly stated aims of that is to remove Peter, Michael and Chris. And by the way, people always ask why I use first names. It's because my experience in life is that people from posh school use surnames of people. And I always grew up using people's first names. So
I use whichever one of the names I remember. Can you say Chris McKay, the FD, then, yeah, as well?
Yeah, so Chris McKay, Michael Nicholson, Peter Lawwell, right? So the stated, very publicly stated thing is for them to go. And a bit like you, I look at that and I think, right, okay, so they go. And Dermot replaces them with clone of Peter, clone of Michael, clone of Chris. I'm not quite sure what changes. The other thing that you've touched on there, if you read up anything on the type of person that Dermot is, and I don't know if you're like me, I can be quite a contrarian and a bit like, you know, if 100 people tell me to do something, that's less likely to make me change my behaviour than if one person tells me to do something. Yeah. And my concern is it won't achieve anything because Dermot won't be seen to back down to the support, to the rabble, as he might see it. So my concern is that for me, the most important thing is I want Celtic to be the best Celtic can be. I'm passionate about Celtic. It's what I do in my leisure time. I don't want to stuff that up. And therefore, My concern is the Celtic Collective continues to make noise and disrupt. Dermot digs his heels in even more, and Peter, Michael and Chris stay in situ, the noise gets louder, they're more likely to stay in situ because Dermot would not want to be seen. Because I can imagine Dermot's attitude. If I give in to them, that means they think a bit like, he'll perceive it like a toddler every time they stamp their feet and give in to them. So my concern is that just causes, there's a greater ill will. And through that schism between the support and the club rides through the other Glasgow club who finally get their act in order. And that might be, if this carried on for a considerable period of time. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the alternative is. I'm just saying that's my concern. And your point about Peter, it's the reason why, I've seen rumours online about, I think Peter might be stepping down at the AGM. Peter went following the failure to achieve 10 in a row. Peter's son went as a sacrificial lamb for that awful transfer window 2-3 summers ago. I can't see Peter Lawwell being prepared to give a hat-trick of head on a plate, of his head on a plate, or the Lawwell head on a plate to supporters. I just can't see it from a practical perspective.
Yeah, I'd like to say, but, and I have nothing to back it up, that I thought he was going to stand down this year. But if he was, he's certainly not now. Because he'd be a proud man, he'd be a stubborn man. Maybe not as much as Dermot. But, I'd like to think, but I know Peter reasonably well. He spent quite a bit of time there. He's been really good to me in the past, especially when with the basketball team. He did a lot for us, as did Brendan at that time. Serious danger. I'm hoping it's not too late for him. So I wouldn't wish it on him or anybody else for that matter. I'm not at a club. But serious danger to scorch everything, his entire legacy at this club. And I think he still has a chance to leave with a bit of credibility. I'm less concerned about Chris Mackay. I think an FD is an FD. They don't really do much. They do what they're told, FDs. But so does everybody at the club, to be fair. But as a minimum, it has to be Peter and Chris, the CEO, that goes. Sorry, Michael Nicholson. That's why I say Nicholson. So CEO and the chairman, I think, have to go. But it sounds like that won't be enough for the collective. But whether two of them go, or three of them go, or one of them go, nothing will change. But I could guarantee you right now, and I bet you could do the same thing, me and you could write down three names of three people that could be the next CEO of Celtic. And I bet between the two of us, we'd get the person. It'll be the same sort of guy. And it will be a guy. It's all like a game where, like, old, male, pale, stale, when you look at our board and executive, where's the diversity? Where's the young people? Like I'm now too old. We're the same age.
Yeah.
It's missed our whole generation out. There's younger people at the club that are in their 20s. Where are the people in their 40s and 50s that are real at the top of their game now? Not guys at 60, 70 and 80. Where are the people that missed the entire generation out?
They're all at Aston Villa.
Yeah, maybe so. You continue to get promoted. But yeah, it's when you, and again, I'm going back a lot, and I was much younger, as was everybody, but Fergus's board was quite a heavyweight board Fergus had. Mm-hmm. There was some real heavy-hitting talent on that board. Where is it now? It's people, with board members who don't get paid a hell of a lot of money. They get good money. They get about 40 grand a year for turning up at a board meeting every year. And an AGM. But what they get is, they get the blazer, they get the tie, they get their place in the boardroom every week, and when they're dining out on a Saturday night, that's the currency in which they trade. I'm a Celtic director. They should all be in fixed terms. Like 4 or 5 years max, they should all be in fixed terms. And where's the heavyweight politicians or communications people or commercial people? There's nobody. Nobody.
I mean, for me, if there was going to be a change, the sort of sop to the fans of demonstrating change, whilst at the same time, would the sop to the fans of demonstrating change, the easy route, but not giving in to the fans by giving them the three names that they've asked for, the easy answer is Tom Allison and Brian Wilson. Because Tom Allison's been there for 17, 18 years and on the board, and so's Brian Wilson. So they should be getting changed, or they should have been changed long ago. And then it's, you get back to your point, I don't want to start naming names because it wouldn't be fair to the individuals involved. No. But I can think of some exceptionally heavyweight people that I know to be Celtic supporters whether they would want the distraction of, you know, it's that David Murray comment about it was Rangers were 1% of his business interests but used up 90% of his time or something like that. I can well imagine being a Celtic board member would disproportionately use up your time as a non-executive director. But there are people that I can think of that are global heavyweights.
100%.
I mean, I'm actually not overstating it. I'm not being melodramatic. There are global heavyweights that if they landed on the Celtic board, for me, somebody sent me a message at the weekend saying, you're in at cricket. I'm watching the cricket while I'm waiting for the Ryder Cup to come on. How come, I'm watching India against Pakistan, how come Pakistan, which is famously a poor country and a corrupt country, how come they've got Pepsi and KFC everywhere as a major sponsor, and we have Daffabet? And obviously there's the money in Pakistani cricket, despite it being a poor country, is huge. Mm-hmm. And obviously there's lots of different reasons. But the nub of that question is, are we a brand that could... my answer would, you know, I asked you the questions about we've achieved all of this. I continually say, I reckon we could be 25, 30% better than we are.
Yeah, but we I'm a commercial guy. My career was all about commercial. Even as an MD and CEO, I was still a sales guy. The number was bigger that I could deliver. But I'm a commercial guy. And the amount of money that we've left on the table on commercial deals over the years blows my mind. Now, I had a conversation with somebody, the person, that tried to negotiate a deal to bring a sponsor into Celtic, a main jersey sponsor, a worldwide brand, a world that every single one of us would know instantly when we've seen it or we heard the name. And at the very last minute, the shareholders pulled it because of the political heat was the exact word that we used that goes around this club and the fan base. So the club will use that. I've challenged Peter on it. I've challenged the gentleman who's now at Aston Villa that we might have been alluding to. And that's the reason it's given. Every time we get a big brand near it, somebody puts up a Dalf banner. I don't know that I believe that. I do know in that instance, I know for a fact that global brand did pull it right at the end. But you're not telling me that we can't get sponsored. I spend most of my time in Portugal, and I look at the Diddy teams that are in Portugal, and they're cutting about with like Uber on their shirts and Subway and things like that. Big brands. And we've got Daffabet. I don't even think Daffabet exists as a business. Can I get a bet on Daffabet? I've never seen them as a... I don't even know what they do. It's not like a Ladbrokes or a Paddy Power. I've never seen a site that you can bet on for Daffabet. But it's Noddy and it's Magners, and that's disappeared off the back of the jersey. I think we've got a back of the jersey sponsor now. Like you say, there are big, big, top-tier, C-level people that would be a great fit for Celtic that have got a passion or a connection with the club. But a top weight CEO is not going to come in and work under them.
So that gets all the way back to the challenge. So, you know, as I say, there are people out there who are global names. If you work in financial markets and world commercial markets that are Celtic fans, that if they hit our board, people would sit up and take notice. Actually, if they were on our board, you might be able to overcome that political heat comment, because their existence might help you just tip the person back in favour, because they would have the comfort of going, yeah, but I suppose he's there.
Yeah. Right. But yeah, like you say, you've got like Richie Rich as CEO, and he's standing up there, like he's a quoted person, or she's a quoted person, with all due, more so than with all due respect, Michael Nicholson, the ex-company lawyer, or Peter Law, CEO, who was ex-financial controller on the FD. You need a heavyweight that day one coming into the job, they're coming not just with a contact list, a Rolodex seems to be the word in vogue now. Even most people listening to this podcast don't know what a Rolodex is. Yeah, day one they're coming with two or three good opportunities, whether that be for naming rights in a stadium or a main jersey sponsor or stuff. Not just Noddy deals of the new Henrik Larsson name. Everybody loves Henrik, right? But come on, again, read the room, guys. I don't need them. They want me to buy more stuff that I'm too young for, I'm too old for, sorry. Can't fit into. But you're right. But again, it's hard because And again, I don't, it'd be wrong of me to say that, me and Don McKay are best pals. We're not enemies, but I don't know him that well, but I know him well enough. He wasn't a football guy. He's a rugby guy. He's not full Boone Celtic fan like me and you and most of the people that are listening to this podcast or watching this podcast. He's a rugby guy. That was his passion. Granted, he's part of that old St. Aloysius Mafia stroke boys club, but he's a good business guy. He's a sports guy. And he came in and he could have done great things. Maybe not as big as some of the heavyweight type people that we're talking about, but certainly more than, with all due respect, a company lawyer that's never done a commercial job in their life.
But again, that gets back to the challenge of, if you are currently chairman of one of the top 200 brands in the world, you're not going to come into Celtic and be told and see corporate governance in terms of the length of time that shareholders are on the board and things like that. You're not going to sack and allow that to happen.
No.
If you are a top-notch CEO that currently commands close to £1 million somewhere else, you're not going to come into Celtic and not expect to have full remit to run the business as you see best within the constraints that a PLC board would put in place. So it gets back to the catch-22 of Dermot Desmond.
If you're somebody at the top of your game internationally or even in the UK, you've probably earned a lot of money. And you, let's just imagine you're in your 40s and you think, I want to be CEOs. I'm prepared to do. Now, I don't mind, when we're the sort of club that we are with the income we have, I'd have no issue if we went and paid a CEO £5 million a year. I'd have no issue with that. If it was one of these absolute heavyweight people from boardrooms worldwide, I'd have no issue paying top dollar, because we kind of pay top of the game for players. We kind of pay people £200,000-£300,000 a week, but we can pay a manager well. We can pay a CEO well. We can pay a coaching staff well. Let's not get onto that. But you're right. We're going over it and over and over it. Nobody's going to come because they might be prepared to take a wee bit of a reduction in their income. But if they think they're going to come and not get free rein and free hand to make a success of it, they're not going to touch you with a barge pole. And the sort of people that are going to touch you with a barge pole, you have to question why they're doing it. Because that smacks of, I want the title and I want the business card, if people still have business cards. So yeah, it's not, and again, and that's the problem, it's Dermot. He's the colonel in this. He sits right in the middle and you cannot remove him. You can't force him out. You can't force him out unless somebody gets to a bigger shareholder than him personally. But that's out my league, that's for sure. But yeah, I gut feel is somebody will go. Somebody will go between now and Christmas. And my money would be on there from Michael, as you would call.
So where do you see, because we've got the fan collective going on, and I've said what my reservations are just in terms of the outcome of things. Not that I particularly want it to fail or whatever, no, just in terms of...
It's hard, right? It's tough.
Yeah. So where do you see this going? What sort of timetable? How do you deal with the fact that it's Dermot is the issue? And he's worth £1.5 billion. And when the silent process was going on, he's at Bethpage at the Ryder Cup.
You can't, it's his train set. You can't make him sell his shares. The Celtic Collective, I like it. It's not what we are. We, and I'm talking about myself specifically, David and Peter, maybe perhaps yourself, but people of our age, we've had our time as being the rebels and the vocal element. I think there's a time and a place for that, and we need it. We need it now, and then everybody coming together. I'm very impressed how quickly it's happened. It's moved at a rate in knots. Personal level, I don't like being silent watching Celtic, but that's a personal view. If somebody chooses to cheer or not come in late, they're not crossing the picket line here. It's a personal choice how you support the club. I like the visual stuff. Probably I like the stuff at Thistle that they did with the faces and what have you. You can hold up red cards. That costs money, right? You want to do banners and tifos. This doesn't strike me a collective that have got income and a budget to do stuff like that. But I do like the visual stuff. And there's a lot of people in that, and I can imagine there's a lot of people fighting for control of it, and that's always difficult. What I don't want to see, and I mean this sincerely, I don't want Dermot to be turned into a Mike Ashley type figure like he did at Newcastle, and people going after him personally and his property and his other businesses and family, and that was, I don't think that's a good look for our club. But my worry is that we're not playing particularly well right now. It's a hard watch right now. We get another couple of draws or defeats, it may get a wee bit nasty, and that might suit the club a wee bit if it gets nasty, because then they can't be taken seriously. Right now we've played with a straight bat for all those cricketers out there. That's just me and you, by the way, right? We've played with a straight bat as a group of fans. It's not my fight. I don't live in Glasgow full time. I'm not there. Don't get me wrong. If I was 25 or 30, I'd be at the front of the queue standing on a milk crate with a megaphone. That'd absolutely be my thing. I'm too old for that and too far away. I want to do something else. It's not as exciting. There's no crashing through the barricades on the front line. We've done the boring stuff, and I think that the collective are sort of more revolution, we're more evolution. What we're trying to do will take a while, but the sooner we start it, the sooner we stand a good chance of getting to a point where we make a difference. But I want nothing but success for the collective. It's difficult for them to get what they want and when they want it. And sack the board. I know it's a metaphor when they're singing it. But yeah, it's not going to be without its challenges. And especially the next couple of games where I think there's protests on like 29
29 and
and
32.
is that days since they've been silent?
Silence. So Saturday was silence 12 minutes. Braga silence 29 minutes. The next, and then Motherwell silence 32 minutes. And again,
Is that because of days that the board have been silent? What's the relevance to the, I know the 12th man at Kilmarnock,
yeah.
but I asked somebody that at the weekend, and they said, well, I think it's the number of days since the letter went into them that have been silent or not answering the letter with the seven questions. And I don't know.
I think it might be, and I know there's an element of, well, you don't make the noise anyway, but I mean, that's one of these things you've just pointed out. Not everybody, but for a lot of us, you get to a certain age in life, and that's not my thing anymore. That's for somebody else to do. So I'm not going to, but at the same time, I don't like the concept. You know, I chucked all the stats at someone the other day about, there's been about 10 pieces of research done all about how the COVID season illustrated that fans make a difference. So the teams that suffered most during COVID, proportionately, were the teams that normally are famous for having the most passionate fans. So I'm not a big fan because I don't want Celtic detrimental. At the same time, somebody might say to me, "Well, sometimes you need to have this pain now to have the longer benefit." And I take that comment on board. It's just, you know, I've got enough shit going on in my life. Celtic games is where I get my enjoyment.
But it's, I keep coming back to, as a fan group, Celtic fans, I've observed over the years, we do tend to educate ourselves very well in terms of what's going on at our club and other clubs as well. But we understand the problem very quickly. We do, it's in our nature to be rebels and to be a wee bit militant and say, no, we're not settling for this and this. So we've won X leagues, it's no enough. The fact of the matter is, at peer level clubs, I consider at our peer level, trying to clubs like Bruges and Copenhagen, and even clubs like Bodo Glimt that we were calling a Wi-Fi password a few years ago, clubs like that are leaving us behind. They're leaving us behind in terms of their model, their recruitment model, and what they're achieving and how much they're getting for players. That's on this board. It's happened on their watch, and this board should have gone. It should have gone when we didn't get the 10. It should have been dismantled. Not, I can't get everybody leaving at once, but it should have been dismantled then. Just the whole 10 season and then dealing with the recruitment of Eddie Howe, which I think we might have dodged the bullet, because like I said, I don't think he'd achieved what Andrew would have, although he's a very good coach. But some people are really coaching, but they're no big enough to survive in Glasgow. We've seen a lot of evidence of that in the past. But no, it's over for this board. The collective for me will do a lot of them. Let the ultra get out. You kind of complain about ultras. Ultras going to ultra, right? That's what they do. I remember getting my uncles and everybody telling me off in the 80s for singing songs in the jungle that I shouldn't have been singing. And we were all like that then. It's who a club are. It's who a club. We don't just sit back and, like I say, disappear at the golf club and let a club die. That's not what we're about. So I think there's room for the collective. It's going to be a challenge, but there's a lot of smart people involved in that. And you as well. But we're going to do our own things at Celtic Supporters Limited. As I say, we've got the websites up, at
It says,
celticsupporters.net.
how do you find out about
Yeah.
Celtic Sport?
So there's a website there. It's nothing flash. It's celticsupporters.net. It just tells you about what we are, who we are, what we're trying to achieve. And in the coming weeks, you'll see an option for people to sign up as members. It's a members-based organisation. All of the costs, all of the income from membership will go to buying shares, and there'll also be the share location finding service for us to find the shares for people that don't know where they are. And there'll also be things like standard proxy forms and what have you. So there'll be two or three things over the next 2 or 3 weeks, but we hope to be up and running in October and very quickly and start buying small amount of shares through the membership income. But also then leaning into the guys that have already made promises to us, if you do this, this, and this, then yeah, we'll sign one of your proxy forms. And we can start saying when you land on the website, here's how many shares we own, here's how many shares we control, and here's what percentage of Celtic we've got. And it'll be a decimal point of an eye chart the first time somebody sees it. But hopefully it'll get to 1% quickly. And then you can then see some chunky incremental jumps in it that people start putting larger amounts of shares into their voting block. So that's what I've got. Better, nothing better to do in my time.
Okay, well, with that, Duncan, I'll say thanks very much.
Thank you, sir, and hope to see you again soon. Hail,
Cheers.
hail.
Bring me sunshine in your smile.
We hope you enjoyed that podcast. There will be more along soon. Please share the joy of Celtic Underground. Rate us wherever you can find us on your podcast provision, and also subscribe to thecelticunderground.substack.com. As you'll be aware, there are two types of subscription. There's free subscription, where you get a certain amount of content delivered directly to your email address, and then there's a paid-for subscription, where you get even more content delivered directly to your email address as and when it comes out. Anyway, enough of me. We hope you enjoyed the podcast, and this is me, Harry Brady, saying good night and God bless. Good night.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.